Well, good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our book pick segment. This is a segment that we look forward to every week where we have two incredible booksellers, independent booksellers in our region. We are blessed with the most amazing bookstores and two booksellers from two bookstores on the program this morning to tell us about great books that have come across their radar or on their store shelves or will be very, very soon. We welcome Kira Weisner from Merit Books in Millbrook, New York. Hello, Kira. How are you?
I am great. Good morning.
Good morning. Wonderful to have you here, as always. And Lily Bartels joins us from Open Door Bookstore and Gift Gallery in Schenectady, New York. Good morning.
Good morning, Joe.
How are you?
I'm well, thanks.
Excellent. Great to see you both. Thank you very much for being here. All right, Kira, let us begin with you.
All right, I'm going to go with the heaviest, hardest first.
Okay.
A lot of people know Miriam Taves. She wrote the book Fight Night and Women Talking, which was made into a really fantastic film. She has now written a memoir that was prompted by a speech that she had to make at a writing festival where the prompt was like, why do you write? And she kept submitting answers to this and getting rejected. And she's written a memoir, which is...
Doesn't seem like you could answer that question incorrectly. If you're like, why do you write? This is why I write. No, that's not right.
That's wrong. She spins these amazing tales, but around such reality. And she had two very traumatic experiences. Her father and her sister both committed suicide. And she was... she's written novels about that, but when she explores it in this memoir, she mirrors both like her whole experience with her life and them, and then how she wrote about it and how she's writing about it now. It's like I wrote when I finished it that it just seems like this multi-dimensional book. She is able to look at her own inner pain and how she translates that to characters, but also how she understands it and gives other characters ways to explain those emotions. So it's just, it's an amazing memoir. And they've also re-released a lot of her novels that were out of print or just had not been reprinted in a long time in some new editions. So the Miriam Taves shelf is now memoir and fiction, and there's just a ton out there. And she is a worthy, worthwhile reader.
And the new book, A Truce That Is Not Peace.
Right.
All right.
Crazy.
You're looking at me, so I'm taking that as a go.
Go.
I'm going to start with a new novel. It's actually out a week from today on September 2nd, called Amity by Nathan Harris, who a few years ago wrote a wonderful book called The Sweetness of Water. And now in this new novel, it is set in the immediate aftermath of the Civil War, and it's the story of two formerly enslaved siblings, Coleman and June, who, despite the fact that they've been emancipated, they still have not found the freedom that they've been promised. So they have no other options, really, so they continue working for the Harper family who had enslaved them in exchange for room and board. 2 years ago, they were separated when their former enslaver, Mr. Harper, went to Mexico and took June with him. And in Mexico, he hopes to strike it rich in silver mining. So Coleman is left behind, grieving her absence, and he clings to the hope that someday June will return. That's really all he has to hold on to. But he gets a letter from Harper summoning him to Mexico, so he sets out with Harper's daughter, Florence, on a journey that turns disastrous and leaves them on the run from these two ruthless brothers who are, they'll stop at nothing to capture Coleman and Florence and get the money that they feel that they're owed. So together they endure a shipwreck, a kidnapping. They're imprisoned by a Mexican general who then enlists Coleman to track down Mr. Harper. And meanwhile, June has escaped Harper. She's fallen in love with a man named Isaac, who's a black Seminole. And this was something I did not know about, that freed Africans after the Civil War allied themselves with Seminole Indians in the Southeast and eventually in Mexico. So that was an interesting thing to discover. And so together, she and Isaac have made their way to this black community called Amity. All of this time, Coleman is hoping against hope that he's going to find June, but Harper is also on the hunt for her. I was blown away by this book. I know I may say that occasionally when I'm on here, but
it can happen. It's
no,
real.
No, it's a stunner in every way. It's an intimate story that also manages to be an epic story. It's unrelentingly suspenseful, and the characters are just so fully developed. They are truly unforgettable, and the writing is gorgeous, but the heart of the story is really the unshakable love between Coleman and June and their almost unbelievable resilience in the face of staggering odds. I'm also, in closing, going to mention that there's a dog named Oliver who plays a rather large role in the story, so that's a bonus.
Oh, what kind of dog?
Oh, I don't remember. A small dog.
Okay.
I don't remember the breed.
Auxiliary dog? Yeah, that's good. kind of like your dog, Kara.
Yeah.
The name of the book is Amity by Nathan Harris. Good stuff. All right.
Okay, so maybe I'll dovetail off that into Black Star by Kwame Alexander. This is the second book in a series he's written called The Door of No Return. They're novels written for people, I would say, up to us as grown-ups because they're lovely and, let's say, starting at about 10 years old. Mm-hmm. They're written in verse. And this is a book where the main character is a girl named Charlie who is a pitcher, and she's really loves baseball and playing baseball, and she's living somewhere where there's still a lot of segregation and heightened emotions around race, and there's also the history that she is told by her grandparents of things that happened, especially with like KKK stuff and house burnings, and she's kind of coming to terms with herself now in the world she's living in, and also gets this beautiful and really intense glimpse into her past from her grandparents throughout the story. And that's Black Star. And then I feel like I could, at the same voice, say Max in the Land of Lies is also a second book in a series. This is by Adam Gidwitz. And this is a boy during the Holocaust. In the first book, you see him in, he's been sent to London by his mother to get him out of Germany. And he trains to be a spy, which is like, that's the pretend part. And then in this book, he goes back into Germany and kind of finds his parents and locates them. But again, there's this really interesting positioning of history where you have what everything you know now that the people and the characters in the book can comment on in terms of like why, let's say in this case, like Germany was, you know, poised to do what they did, and how German people were feeling in addition to how the Jews were feeling at the same time, which is, that's not something you always get in the same space. And so we have that also. It's like another great ten and up book, but that I really enjoyed as a grown up.
The name of the books just mentioned, Black Star, The Door of No Return series by Kwame Alexander, and Max in the Land of Lies, A Tale of World War II by Adam Gidwitz. All right, Lily.
The Colonel and the King by Peter Guralnick. Peter Guralnick is one of my very favorite music writers. Some years ago, he wrote a biography of Elvis called Last Train to Memphis. Mm-hmm. And this is not only my favorite biography of a performer, it's my favorite biography ever. It's just an outstanding book. And now he is going to take a fresh look and a deeply researched look into Colonel Tom Parker, who, as we know, was Elvis's manager. And he really presents a far more nuanced and complete look at this person who's always sort of been considered a villain who ruined Elvis's career. But the story that Guralnick takes is one of a business genius who actually cared a great deal about Elvis and was his confidant and his friend. Parker was born in the Netherlands in 1909. He was born as Andreas van Kuyk. He came to America at 17. Obviously, he changed his name. And when he got here, he took jobs in carnivals. And that experience helped him develop promotional skills that led to his managing country stars like Hank Snow and Minnie Pearl and Eddie Arnold. And then in 1955, he heard Elvis perform. And I'm going to do a sidebar here. One of my favorite quotes ever was a John Lennon quote who said, "Before Elvis, there was nothing." Mm-hmm. So just imagine hearing him and seeing him for the first time. So when he met Elvis, he got him out of his contract with Sun Records and got him signed up with RCA. And they obviously had a very deep bond, but that began to fray as Elvis got more and more famous, but also as Elvis sank more and more into his addictions. In 1973, they quote-unquote fired each other. Mm. They eventually reconciled, and Tom Parker, you know, he remained Elvis's manager, but the relationship was never the same again. Guralnik had at his disposal this trove of previously unpublished correspondence, and that helped him write this very deeply insightful look at what was a very complex dynamic between two men who were both, in their own way, larger than life. It's a completely engrossing story.
Peter Guralnik is the author of The Colonel and the King by Peter Guralnik.
I feel like that Tom Hanks portrayal in that film is hard to get out of your head.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Yeah.
Kira.
All right, let's do, again, two. I've bought a bunch of children's books this week that I also still really enjoy.
Yep.
So we're going to do Miffy's ABCs first.
Miffy.
That's right? Miffy.
Miffy.
M-I-F-F-Y.
Yes.
And Miffy. All right.
So
it's a bunny.
Is a Dick Bruna character. It's a bunny.
All
and
right.
Miffy, as I actually am not sure I knew this. You said she predates Hello Kitty.
She was around when my children were little.
Well, me too, but I don't remember when Hello Kitty came.
I don't think she was around in the 1970s. I could be wrong.
Oh, I think Hello Kitty. Well, I had little twin stars for my barrette case. But anyway, so this is Miffy's ABCs, and you know the colors are great. You know they pop in that kind of Scandinavian way. I feel like. Miffy is Dutch. Dick Bruna is Dutch. And the O is for octopus. I had like a Miffy freeze on my wall, and my mom, the octopus is not actually very scary, but my mom still put a little smile on it to make it a little less. This is the octopus, but my whole life there was like a little red smile on this octopus.
Oh, that's very cool.
But they're just, you know, Y is for yarn. Miffy likes to knit. Z is for Z's. Good night, puppy. Good night, Miffy. It's very sweet, and I'm a big Miffy person. We have lots of little Miffy things hanging off of everything.
They're very gentle stories too.
So we will say that Hello Kitty came was created in 1974, released in 1975.
Oh, okay. So Miffy definitely before that.
Yes.
Which you said.
Okay.
And so they've just republished a bunch of these books in board book form. So there's a whole new trove of Miffy out there and available for you. And then I'm going to pair that with a book that was just as comforting to my, you know, 12-year-old self and my grown-up self, which is called The Library of Unruly Treasures by Jean Birdsall. And this is about a girl who goes to her great-uncle Matthew, which I feel like is a nod to ballet shoes, great-uncle Matthew, for some time in the summer and discovers this whole fairy world that had been nurtured by women in the family for years.
Yeah.
And she, you know, her father was not really part of that family, and her parents are problematic. The dad's an alcoholic. The mom doesn't love to spend time. Like, everyone's off with girlfriends or boyfriends or getting married for multiple times. And the main character, Gwen, is really left alone a lot. And so it's another positioning of, you know, a lot of times someone said to me the other day, like, why is everyone an orphan? And I feel like this is a conversation we have all the time, because if you weren't an orphan, your parents wouldn't let you do any of the things that you do in books. But this girl is kind of emotionally orphaned by her parents and then sent with a really great caretaker, caregiver to form a bond with over the summer. And it's just, they're fairies and there's a quest, and it just feels fantastic.
Good stuff. All right. And the name of that is
The Library of Unruly Treasures
by Jean Birdsall.
Little fairy things.
Illustrated by Matt Phelan. The book before that was Miffy's ABCs. All right.
I'm going to talk about a book called Deadwood, Gold, Guns, and Greed in the American West by Peter Cozens.
Deadwood.
Yeah. We just had him on.
It was
a very nice guest, yes.
Oh, I'm sorry I missed that. Yeah. So, you know, as you all know, Did I just say y'all?
Yeah, yeah. That's okay.
Oh, my goodness.
I like it. Right. I'm embracing y'all.
So Deadwood holds a prominent place in our American mythology of the Old West. I feel like I somehow grew up being aware of Deadwood, just absorbed from the culture at large. It became a lot more famous from with the...
Did you love it? I
with
loved
the,
it. Every
the
moment
series Deadwood on HBO.
Yeah.
Every moment.
It was brilliant. That show did an amazing job of not romanticizing the Old West. It was dirty. It was gritty. It was violent. It was ruthless. It was greedy.
It was Shakespeare.
Yes. Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yes, exactly. So in this new narrative history, Cousins gives a very fast-paced and brilliantly written account of this gold mining boomtown. I never really understood that it was over a period of just 3 years, 1876 to 1879, that solidified in our like collective historical consciousness this notorious little town. You know, three very short years. It's also the story of how truly ruthless and greedy and lawless a place it was. As Cousins put it, the town itself was actually an outlaw enterprise because it was founded against explicit orders from the federal government to stay out of the sacred territory of Native nations. But P.S., not long afterwards, that same federal government would be, you know, making war on these same, you know, Native people. At any rate, so all of the iconic characters that we think we know, obviously Wild Bill Hickok, Calamity Jane, Crazy Horse, and yes, if you watched the HBO series, Al Swearengen, yes, he was a real person. And he brings them all to really vivid life in this book. He is an incredibly skillful storyteller, and this is just an extremely entertaining story.
It really is. Really interesting. As you said, a hell of a lot happened in just 3 years.
I know.
From beginning to end. The name of the book, Deadwood, Gold, Guns, and Greed in the American West by Peter Cousins. All right.
All right. I'll go to a nonfiction.
Okay.
Lily and I were talking about this outside. So this is a book called Are You Mad at Me? By Meg Jofenson, who's a social worker. And this is just another book, I think, to add to the books you can read about trying to understand who we are, who our parents were, why we respond the way we respond to things. And I always feel like there's a lot you can take from books if you're not even taking the whole thing.
Yes.
But in this one, what she introduces is a fourth F, and she credits the gentleman who originally talked about it, which is maybe 10 or 12 years ago. So the responses to trauma are right: fear, flight, freeze, which I had forgotten, and then she talks about this one called fawning. And so, you know, those people who keep the peace, who are constantly always scanning to make sure they know how everybody is feeling, what people are doing, did something happen that's going to bother, like, let's say, like a parent, and then what can you do to kind of swoop in and like make everything stay peaceful, and how you then this title, Are You Mad at Me? Like, if somebody doesn't text you back right away now, you know, and you immediately think like, oh, like, what have I done? Or, oh, I can't say no to this invitation because that person will be mad at me. And, you know, I think to some degree we all have elements of thinking that at different times, unless it's just me. And
it's not.
Okay. So it's interesting to read all of the different case studies she has and the people she introduces and the excerpts that she, you know, talks about. Like, she talks about herself, like, really needing a day to herself but not wanting to say no to her friend that was invited her to a museum, and the back and forth and how her body felt when she thought, wait, I don't have to go, but then how her body felt when she thought, wait, but then is this person going to be upset with me? It's just, you know, I think I'm constantly reading about people, so it's like more reading about people.
You know, one great benefit of getting older is not caring.
The fifth F.
Well, that wasn't going to be my fifth F, but yes.
It's it's neat.
Yeah.
Are You Mad at Me? How to Stop Focusing on What Others Think and Start Living for You.
Which I will actually also add, there was some article about how are all these self-help books, or what they're calling that, which I have this in psychology, are is it ignoring like our community responsibility to each other? And so I think that's not what this is doing here, but I think that subtitle, like living for you and in community.
Yeah. Like actually care. Right. Are you mad at me?
Right.
Yes. All right. I think I don't want to say any more about that. Okay. Lovely.
We'll talk.
Yeah.
So Kira and I both, do you want to talk about this?
No, you start.
Okay. So, Kira and I both brought this new novel by David Levithan, Songs for Other People's Weddings. It is by him, but also it's with another person named Jens Lekman. And the main character in this story is Jay, that's the initial Jay, who is a successful singer-songwriter in Sweden. And because he wrote a song called If You Ever Need a Stranger to Sing at Your Wedding, he now has this lucrative side gig singing at other people's weddings, mostly strangers, but also some friends. But unlike other wedding singers, he doesn't just sing covers of other people's popular songs. He writes an original song for each couple after getting to know them a little bit. But his own life is now complicated by the fact that his girlfriend, V, has had to move to New York for her job. And so he's struggling with what's now a long-distance relationship. And then he's offered a wedding gig in New York, and so he's very happy to do that. But when he arrives in New York, he finds that V is not all that excited to see him. And things slowly begin to break down between the two of them. But he continues to play weddings. He continues to write his original songs. But now some of his own heartbreak is sort of making its way into his lyrics. So here's the really interesting thing about this novel. The lyrics that we read in this book were written by Jens Lekman, who is himself a successful singer-songwriter in Sweden. And he is also a part-time wedding singer. And he actually did write a song called If You Need Someone, a Stranger to Sing at Your Wedding. So this is, it's a very emotional, heartfelt book. It's funny. It's really insightful. And we follow Jay as he is trying to find out for himself whether love really does conquer all, whether marriage is even necessary, and if there's any hope for his relationship with V. So, you know, it's funny, it's compassionate, and there's a lot of wisdom to it.
Yeah. I also was thinking a lot about how David always introduces lots of great kinds of couples. Mm-hmm. So there are traditional couples or non-traditional couples that he talks about, and he does manage to kind of get in people's heads and ask the questions, at least the characters themselves, that I feel like I'm sometimes thinking, you know, yeah, whether in real life or in a book where you want to know more. And he is willing to talk about the hard emotions, right, in that fear, mm-hmm, right, when Jay comes to New York.
Yes.
And also just the busyness. You know, he'd suddenly, mm-hmm, almost like an opposite that we've had in a lot of literature where you're faced with one partner who's, you know, just so busy and maybe not communicating, but maybe isn't necessarily pulling away. It's that, what's your need for space? And now, mm-hmm, where everything, where you can, you know, be on a text on a screen in front of someone right away, like, how do you create space for yourself? How do you create space to grow? There's a lot.
Yes, that resonates.
Yeah. Songs for Other People's Weddings, a novel. All right. Do you have one more?
I do. Oh, it's this really great, new, fun, I want to say romp of a book through a college town that feels a lot like Yale, called Seduction Theory by Emily Adrian. And so you have your main couple we're introduced to, and they're both professors and they're writing, and they're both start to toy a little bit with infidelity, but they do it in different ways. And the female partner of the group, her graduate student, starts to write her thesis, basically, which is really what the whole book is. It's her thesis. Mm-hmm. But it's involving the personal lives of her mentor and her thesis advisor and that thesis advisor's husband. And it's just, it feels a little like a David Lodge academia, you know, mm-hmm, both skewering and getting in there. There's a modern element to it because it's obviously very much now. And it was just, it was fun. It was really fun.
I will say that I picked this book up over the weekend thinking that, oh, here's a nice little short book. and I can just ram right through it, and it'll keep me for the weekend. And no fault to the story. I read about two pages and I fell asleep. And then the next night, I did the same thing. So someday I'll get done, yeah, and I'll just rip through it. But it looks great.
But Joe, you have so much free time.
I know. Well, I love. I'm reading something for work, and then I'm doing. I was reading that for fun, and we'll get to the fun reading. That's
it's
okay.
Hard to start a book at night. I find yes. You can pick up a book at night, but no, when you're you start
right.
it at night.
You are so right. We're out of time. I want to remind folks you can find information at meritbooks.com and opendoor-bookstore.com. You can also see the list on our website, wamc.org/roundtable. Our thanks to both Kira Wisner and Lily Bartels for being with us.